Time for us to begin. Let's start with prayer. Okay, on the back table is a one-page handout, which I usually pass out. There's questions over two chapters, and they've been back there before. It's chapters 23 and 24, so many of you probably already have them. But then I told you last week we will not cover chapter 24 in class because it's too long, too complicated, and controversial. And I told you that I would have a handout back there explaining Matthew 24 to the best of my ability. So it's back there. It's 5 pages long. So if you're interested in that, pick up a copy. And if you ever want to talk about it sometime and tell me what you think about Matthew 24 out of class, be glad to do that with you. Highly interesting chapter. Okay. Now also, last week, you never know what people are going to remember about your class. Every now and then somebody says, how was class? Well, asking the teacher how class was is the wrong person to ask. I don't know. I mean, the teacher does the best he can, and sometimes it goes well, and sometimes it doesn't. People to ask are the people who sat in the class. But you never know what people are going to be interested in. Last week, I had a geriatric mind lapse. I was given this wonderful example about a bricklayer and a guy who wouldn't lift a finger. And I knew there was a tool, but I couldn't remember what it was. So after class, at least 4 people came up to me, had looked it up on their phone. 2 of them showed me a picture. It's a HOD, an H-O-D. And it's a thing on a pole and then 2 boards that are somehow stuck together like that on the top of the pole, and I don't know if they still use them or not. I know they used to. They probably got some better way to do it by now. But anyway, you load the bricks into that thing, and then the guy carried it from one part of the job site to another part of the job site, and it's a HOD. Well, and somebody said, this is the most meaningful thing I've ever learned in your classes, was how to carry bricks from one site to another, so you never know. But anyway, that's the word I was searching for unsuccessfully, an HOD, it's a HOD, which is what bricklayers use to carry bricks around, if they still use those things. Okay, tonight we're in chapter 23, and Jesus really gets with it about the Pharisees. There are 7 times in this chapter where he starts one of the verses as, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites." And very interesting. And I've read and reread this chapter, you know, of course, many times preparing for this class. And I finally came up with a question I'd never thought of before, which I will ask you all after we consider verse 12. Because I think it's a pretty interesting question. But let's see what he does here in the verse first. We'll do verses 1-6 first of all. And we see here that it says Jesus is speaking to the multitudes and to his disciples. I think the scribes and Pharisees were within hearing distance. Because when he says, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites," I think they were hearing the whole thing. But it's interesting that in verse 1 it says he was speaking to the multitudes and to his disciples. But I think probably with his understanding that the scribes and Pharisees were also hearing it because he was really letting them have it. And he says, "The scribes and the Pharisees have seated themselves in the chair of Moses. Therefore, all that they tell you, do and observe, but do not do according to their deeds, for they say things and do not do them." And last week we talked about the fact that they apparently were teaching the law of Moses accurately, but were certainly not following it. So they were hypocrites. And then he says, you all do as they say, but not as they do. Now, the message for us is, when truth is spoken, and when I talk about truth, I'm talking about scriptural truth, is spoken by somebody who is a renegade and not living the life that a Christian ought to lead, but they're speaking the truth, we are still to honor the truth. The sleaziness of the messenger does not negate the validity of the truth. And we got to keep that in mind sometimes, because sometimes people who tell us the truth are people that we don't really care for whatever reason. But the truth is still the truth. And they tie up heavy loads and lay them on men's shoulders on hods. But they themselves are unwilling to move them with so much as a finger. And here's the guy who's bent down with the heavy weight and says, can you help me with this door? And the guy says, no, I can't. And perhaps this is where we get, and he wouldn't even lift a finger. But they do all their deeds to be noticed by men. For they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments, and they love the place of honor at banquets and the chief seats in the synagogues. So it was all people who loved show. They loved honor. They're the people who want to sit in the best seats and probably sit there very smugly so that everybody else would notice them. Ooh, there he sits. Wonder how much that seat cost. But he's there. And a couple of things mentioned in verse 5 that we ought to mention. One of them is they make broad their phylacteries. Phylacteries were usually little leather boxes attached to a leather or some kind of a string, and they actually tied them to their heads back then. And it was supposed to be a sign of how spiritually with it you were. A phylactery with this little leather box, and in it was a scripture. And so Jewish men who were so holy would put a scripture in there and then put it in this leather box and literally tie it to their head. Well, some of them would tie more than one to their head. Well, the more phylacteries you had and the bigger they were showed how much holier you were than everybody else. Now, when you can look it up in encyclopedias and on the internet and see it's a goofy looking thing, really. You look at it now and think, how could people take that seriously? But they did. So what Jesus is saying is they make their phylacteries broad to make sure that everybody notices. Do you see how pious and holy I am? Look at these phylacteries. And then lengthen the tassels of their garments. They attached some religious significance to the hems of their garments back then, and they would lengthen them with tassels. And all that was for show and to attract attention. Then going along with that, they loved the respectful greetings in the marketplaces and being called rabbi. Now, what Jesus starts here in these next few verses is a discussion of religious titles. He is not saying that we are not to call our biological fathers our fathers. He's talking about everything that he mentions here is a religious title that is designed to set one man above another man before God. And of course, we know in Christ that is not the case. So he says, they love to sit in the hotshot seats. They love respectful greetings in the marketplaces. They love being called by men rabbi. But do not be called rabbi, for one is your teacher. Well, that's Jesus. And you are all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your Father who is in heaven. And again, the point he's making here is we're talking about religious titles. I mean, it's absurd for some kid to say, you know, Daddy, can I have this or that? And you, oh, don't call me Daddy. That's not what he's saying at all. He's talking about religious titles. And the same thing with verse 10, and do not be called leaders, for one is your leader, that is Christ. But the greatest among you should be your servant, and whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. Those last couple of verses, I don't know how that's exactly going to happen with everybody. I would assume that one application of that of how the humble will be exalted will be at the day of judgment, obviously. But I think there's a certain way that that occurs on earth. I know of some people in this congregation who very quietly do lots of good deeds for people. And I would guess that all of you all know some people who have very quietly done good deeds, maybe for you, in times of need, in times of sickness, in times of mourning, in times of after surgeries and all this kind of stuff. You know, somebody shows up at your door, or somebody sends you a card, or somebody does something for you, and nobody else ever knows about it. And I think that's what he's talking about. Now, but you know about it, and some of these people I know about it, and as far as I'm concerned, that person who did that deed humbly, in my mind, is exalted. And in God's mind is exalted too. Anybody have any comments about that? Don't you all know some people like that? That just wallow in good deeds quietly? They're fantastic people. Okay. Now, here's my question. I reread this chapter and reread this chapter and reread this chapter. Jesus, what we have here is Jesus' sermon or a discourse, and I don't know if we have the whole thing or not, but we have 39 verses worth of it, of him indicting the scribes and Pharisees, and seven times he says, at least seven times, he starts out a verse with scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. Okay, now my question is, why did Matthew, through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, pick out this sermon by Jesus to give us 39 verses worth? I get the point he's making halfway through the chapter. The point that Jesus is making, if you don't even go through all 39 verses, is he hates hypocrisy. And he's looking at these people who just epitomized hypocrisy, and they were sleazy people. And as you read about what they were doing and how they were mistreating people and cheating people and all this kind of stuff and looking for glory and faking greatness when they were really corrupt, I get the idea. But Matthew records 39 verses worth of Jesus' indictment of these hypocrites. Now, my question, out of all the sermons Jesus preached, why do we have this one 2,000 years later? Anybody have any idea? I mean, we don't know the answer, there's no way to be wrong about it. But why do you suppose the Holy Spirit decided it's a good idea for this to be in the Gospels, and even 2,000 years later, Christians will be reading about this? Why? Care to elaborate a little bit?
Well, just that people are the same since Adam and Eve, and we don't handle the knowledge of good and evil and temptation well at all, and pride and those things. And God is the same. So I think it's a reminder for us that this is what's important to God, and it's not to have prestige in this life, but to humble yourself as the Lord did.
Okay, that's a good comment. Do you think the purpose of this being saved for us was for us to be able to look at others, or for us to be able to look at ourselves? You all can't tell because he's in the back row. He's going like that. Anybody else? Somebody's talking about it. Oh, Jimmy. Speak up a little bit, Jimmy. I can't hear what you're saying.
It's both to recognize ourselves, but it's also to recognize it in others. And to, like Jesus saw it and recognized it for what it was, we should be wise enough to recognize it for what it was.
Is hypocrisy a challenge for us? I think it is. In what ways is hypocrisy a tempting challenge for us? I watch televangelists. Who's this clown with the slick black hair that has a private airplane and six houses, six mansions, and what's that guy's name? Osteen. Yeah, Osteen. He fits this. If Jesus were preaching today, he'd say, "And you, Joel Osteen, hypocrite." I know that'd be so. It's obvious to me what kind of guy that one is. He's making money. And who's sending him money? Poor old ladies on a retirement income, and they're writing checks to send to him because he told them if they'll send him a check, that they're going to prosper somehow. And so they do it. And he laughs all the way to the bank as he cuts off the envelope and deposits their check. But I think hypocrisy is a temptation for us too. Yes. I think one of the reasons that Matthew goes on and on and on with seven woes that include hypocrisy and an eighth woe that doesn't, but it's clearly negative, he goes on and on and on, is his way of explaining to us, 21st century Christians, Jesus hates this. He hates this phony hypocrisy. And that kind of sobers me a little bit. Because then I start thinking, ooh, is it possible that I'm a hypocrite? I mean, I hope I'm not in the same hypocritical category as these clowns were. But could I be? Now, let me give you an example. I think this applies to all of us. I include myself in the group, for sure. But think about this. And nobody needs to confess anything. Just think about it. Sunday mornings, when you show up here at this building, what image do you want to project? Well, I'd like for people to think, well, Bob is spiritual minded. He is sincere. He's honest. He's friendly. He's caring. He's kind. He is those kind of things. Well, is there anything wrong with my wanting you to think that about me? No. Is there anything wrong with you wanting me to think that about you? No. But it's called our Sunday morning appearance, our Sunday morning image. Now the question is, I think now, what is the image that I project Monday through Saturday? I go to work. And I have a relationship with my colleagues. Some of us are supervisors. What are our people we supervise going to say about us? Kind, gentle, sincere, spiritual, honest? What about people we do business with? We go to Kroger's and Publix and Walmart and wherever else it is. What are the cashiers going to say about us after we leave? What a jerk? Or what a kind, honest, sincere guy he was. And to make it even worse, what about at home? Will our spouse say he or she is a kind, sincere, spiritual, honest, caring person? And our kids? And our family? And so what I'm getting at is, and I've thought about this all week, thinking about this, Does my Monday through Saturday image that I project out there in the world match up to my Sunday morning image? Now, I would say, and I don't mean this to be nasty, I'll just apply it to myself. I would say if my Monday through Saturday image doesn't match up to my Sunday image, I'm a hypocrite. Now, obviously, our behavior is going to be changed by the people we're around. I mean, obviously, in your work situation, spirituality is not necessarily valued, and so you don't have to go around reading the Bible all the time while you're doing your job. There are certain things that are appropriate to be done and things that are inappropriate to be done. But, you know, something like kindness and honesty. Would everybody we deal with in all of our social circumstances say, yeah, he's kind and he's honest? Well, I hope so. And I hope that's the case with all of you all, and I hope it's the case with me. But I just got to thinking, Matthew just went out of his way to tell us Jesus really hates this hypocrisy thing. And then he gives us some really far-fetched examples of people who are just sleazy hypocrites in these scribes and Pharisees. And I got the message from Matthew that Jesus really wants no part of this. And it was enough to sober me up, and I started now recounting. Okay, as I go out and do my little thing in Opelika, what do they think about me? Well, as I do this over here, as I go to Kroger's, what's that checkout clerk think about me? What a jerk, or what a nice guy? What do my family members think about me? Jerk? Nice guy. And we've all known people who've chewed out their spouses Sunday morning at 8:30, but at 10 o'clock, everybody was smiling. And you think, wow, that's an interesting transformation. So anyway, that's my comment. Anybody have a comment about that? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of what he says. Who needs a doctor? The sick people. Yes.
Something else stands out to me. We were talking about, does this apply to us? And I can't help but think of the encounter between Paul and Peter. You look at Peter for who he was at that time, and yet he had a problem with that. Where in the reading of Galatians, where Paul has to oppose him for the way he was conducting himself. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, that's why I say hypocrisy is something that we are tempted to do. There are certain social situations where we are tempted to come across as something that we're not, and that something we're tempted to come across as is not as a Christian, because we get sucked into the worldly examples, and it's less difficult to navigate a social situation if we fit in with all the worldly people. Yes.
We see in Jesus by action.
Yes.
These Pharisees are like saying the right thing, but they're living in complete opposite. And so he is vomiting them out of his mouth, and he's telling them that they're fools and that they're blind. But the people who are just blatantly cold, the prostitutes, those who obviously are just living in sin, that's not how we see him usually speaking to them. It's like, you know that's what you're doing, and you know that where you're headed, and you're lost, and there's forgiveness and grace to come.
Yes.
So you people who claim that you have it and you clearly do not, you are fool and you are blind.
Yes.
And just the change of attitude to Tyler's point is interesting.
Yes. Very, very good comment. Yeah. Well, excuse me. I was thinking how easy it is for us to dismiss these sleazy scribes and Pharisees. And what a bunch of jerks. Oh, they're so hypocrites. And we get down on them so easily, and we forget, if we hold up a mirror to us, we might see some guilt there.
Well, and to that point, that's the bigger point of what we're talking about, is which in that category do we fall?
Yes.
Us, I mean, for as far as I know, in this room, are not those who are the prostitutes on the street. We would be the ones that Jesus is looking at and saying, you're a fool and you're a blind.
Yeah.
You know the truth, and yet you're doing it with us. And so
yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the ways I go to sleep two or three nights before this class is I go to sleep planning how am I going to start that class on Wednesday. And that starts on Sunday night and then Monday night, Tuesday night, of course, and I'm thinking, how's it going to go? And the way I've gone to sleep the last two or three nights is I see how these people are all sleazy hypocrites. Is it possible that I'm a hypocrite? Thinking about that. And then I started thinking about, well, what if I am, what are the reasons? Well, the world's full of temptations to be a hypocrite, because in certain situations it takes courage to say you're a Christian and then live like a Christian and then talk like a Christian and then act like a Christian. Sarah? Yes, and what you said is exactly the reason I brought this up, and that is your comment, we need to examine ourselves. Yes, we do. The battle is never won until we're in the grave. Anybody else? Yes, Rick. Yes, yes. And you say he gets all over them. He got over them 7 times in the one chapter here. He calls them hypocrites 7. And you call somebody hypocrite, does that offend you? That would offend me. Bob, you're a hypocrite. Really? Yeah.
You're saying one thing and doing something.
Yeah. Well, I'm reminded over the years, I've heard of people who are in business, and somebody says, yeah, he's a really nice guy on Sunday, but he's a cutthroat businessman on Monday. Ooh, what does a cutthroat businessman do? Somehow it reeks of not all being honest. Okay, well, I've maybe milked that for more than I should have, but... I really think the 39 verses of this sermon were in there for a reason, and we need to think about it. Sarah?
Also, he was getting all over him, but at the same time later he says, Jerusalem, I wanted to gather you together like a king gathered together. You wouldn't do it. So there was a purpose behind his chewing out. I'm a kid. I've been chewed out by my parents, older sibling, and I needed it. I deserved it. And I'm a teacher. I'm a coach. I've chewed kids out before. There is a time and place for chewing out, but it's also, it can be done in love. If you don't speak the truth in love, it can be done in love. And that's, Jesus was speaking truth here in love. We don't know his tone of voice. We weren't there. We don't know. But I do know, and he said later, I wanted to gather you together like a hen gathers your chicks, and you wouldn't do it.
Yes.
We have to be careful.
Yes.
Humility and considering ourselves again, examining ourselves.
He let them have it for an entire chapter, but at the end he lamented the fact that he had to do it.
Right.
And it's like something that I had a hard time believing when I was a kid. I finally came to understand it as a parent, but it's when the parent says to you, I have to punish you and this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. And I thought, yeah, sure. Then let me spank you. I'll bear the pain. Oh, me. Anybody else have a comment about this? Yes. Yeah. Now, it's interesting when you read commentaries. They talk about the 7 woes in this chapter. I got the New American Standard. There's eight. Seven of the woes start out with, woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. But there's also verse 16 that says, woe to you, blind guides. So that's the eighth woe, but it doesn't fit the pattern of the other seven. So I don't know why anybody wants to make a big deal out of whether or not they're seven or eight, but, you know, the New American Standard says they're eight, but only seven of them fit that pattern. What are you going to say? Yeah, didn't you have your hand raised? Oh, okay. Yes. Yes.
So I don't know why that's left out of the ESV as far as in the general manuscript.
Well, it's very, I'm glad you brought that up, because in the New American Standard, there's a footnote. If you all have the New American Standard, verse 14 has a footnote that says this verse is not found in the earliest manuscripts. Yeah.
So whereas that's exactly what they were doing, preaching, teaching, but it was for the sole purpose of gaining their own.
Yes, and in just a few more verses, he specifically makes that accusation.
So it's like, do you think, now this is kind of a question, do you think even, like Sarah was saying, a sin is a sin is a sin, and God will judge, you'll go to heaven or you'll go to hell, but do you think there's some sort of more severity?
Okay, my personal opinion on that is no. If there is a mild form of hell, I don't want to be in even the mildest form. I'll take the mildest form of heaven anytime. But I think being held to a higher sense of accountability like that is you're being judged by what all you're doing as you're influencing other people. You're in a position of influence. Now, what you're doing is going to get you to hell. But it's going to be even worse because now you're bringing a whole lot of people with you. And that's what they were doing.
Well, and Bob, I think...
Hey, ladies first, and then you.
He knew their motives. He knows our motives. He knew their hearts.
Yes.
He knows our hearts.
Okay, she's saying that God knows our motives and our hearts. Can you imagine the sadness that's going to occur on that day? Those people who thought they were in, and they're not. I mean, that's what, did you all notice how I sneaked in chapter 25 in my Wednesday night talk a week or two ago? But, you know, the door was shut. That's going to be a sad day. The older I get, the more it bothers me that so many people that I know that are so-called good people are going to be lost because they refuse to accept the truth 100%. They'll take 85, 90%. But I don't believe that verse. That Acts 2:38 thing can't be true. That bothers me. And it didn't bother me much when I was 35, but at 72, I'm bothered by that because I care about those people. Anybody else?
One more.
Yes.
James
And don't think, I don't think about that every time I'm in front of a class. I've got to respond. I pray to God every night before I teach a class. Two things. One of them is, help me get it right. And the second is, help me present it the best I can. It's a problem. Of course, with today's new math, that could be true. Okay. Well, this has gone on longer than I thought, but I think it's profitable. Oh, wow. Well, let's see what we can accomplish here. What verses did I have here? We've gone through 10. We've gone through 12. So let's start down with some woes here. And we'll, let's do 13 and 14 and 15 if we can real fast. Woe to you, I'll try to explain each verse as I understand it. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from men, for you do not enter in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. That is the Jewish leaders who absolutely refused to follow Jesus and to listen to what John the Baptist had to say, and then they went out of their way to try to prevent other people from doing it. And we know that happened. I mean, that happened on the day of the crucifixion. Come on, come on, come on, let's kill this guy. So not only are they guilty, and I think this could be a heavier judgment, an example, not only are they guilty of not becoming members themselves, but they're guilty of keeping other people from entering the kingdom. Then 14. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, because you devour. Look at that word, devour. Now, that is not you don't just take advantage of. That is devour. And what's the word devour mean to you? To me, it means you take the whole thing. It's gone. You devour widows' houses. Now, women back then had almost no rights. And even less political clout was widows. The people who were out looking for them were dead. That's why they were widows. And they trusted people. And the same thing as today. You got an 85-year-old woman who's not as sharp as she used to be and maybe hadn't done much business since because she counted on her husband to do it all. And she's vulnerable. And some clown comes along with a get-rich-quick scheme and she gives him all of her money. And then they find out about it. Later that she had $7,000 in her savings account and gave it all to this guy who said he's going to bless her. Well, same kind of thing was happening back then. And apparently these Pharisees had the ability to financially take over these kinds of things and rob these women of their money, devour their houses, their property. Even while for a pretense you make long prayers, therefore you shall receive greater condemnation. And there it is. Not only are you all messing it up for yourselves, but you're cheating all these other vulnerable people. And you know, all through the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, God has put a premium on how we treat the vulnerable. Old Testament's full of it, New Testament's full of it. Well, we'll start with verse 15 next time. Sorry we didn't get farther, but I think we had a good discussion. Thank you very much for your comments.